Welcome back to Shattering This. We have our good friend Glenn on the line. Glenn, what do you have to share with us this morning, or this afternoon?
Well, exactly. Your afternoon, their morning. I was thinking about what you're saying about the situation in Thailand, and I'm thinking in some ways, and maybe the people are able to be a little bit like ho-hum about it, like they may be well-practiced at it. But I was picturing the Thai troops, the Thai military troops in the streets. Okay, maybe they're somewhat like the stormtroopers or robots of the Empire in Star Wars.
Yes.
What's going to be unleashed on us here are more like the orcs from the Tolkien movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, I mean, it's not, I mean, I get a mental picture of troops that aren't out to tase people for pleasure or shoot their dogs to break their hearts or
bashing
down the wrong doors at 3 a.m. I doubt that there's much of that going on in Thailand.
No. No, I don't know exactly how the U.S. military will be deployed here and how it's going to be integrated with the police and federal agents, but between the U.S. military, reservists, police, and federal agents, there's about 1 million of them in the United States. And a million of them, they're armed to the teeth, and of course they've got all manner of means of control, which is electronic surveillance. They control your credit cards and therefore your whereabouts and your spending, your movement. They control your identity. They know everything that you're saying and communicating online and on the phone. I mean, they have such universal means to control, and then they have their drones and they have their satellites. That you put that kind of infrastructure behind a million man army, and the population is going to be rendered stupefied. There'll be nothing that anyone can do to protest.
I guess it could be quite draconian. So I mean,
it's going to be, and they're going to say the same thing. Just go about your business, go about your lives. Don't pay any attention to us. We've taken over the media, and we're controlling the internet. We know what's good for you to see. We know it's good for you to do. We know it's good where it's good for you to be. So you stay where we want you to be, and you read and listen to what we want you to read and hear, and you go about your business.
I've been meaning to pull it up. I heard a news story that had an audio clip from some representative of the military talking about, and Homeland Security talking about groups that they think are threats in the U.S., and
yes.
He went on about this thing about the, and he ended up using the phrase, he's saying that people who are highly religious, highly patriotic, or strongly believe in a strong right to self-determination. And he ended up using this phrase that the issue here is the tyranny of dignity. You know,
wow.
The idea that the personal dignity is tyranny, that caused the populace to manipulate the state. I'm like, holy crap.
Wow, right, yeah.
Created
man to be dignified. He created us to be free, to be dignified, to be enlightened. And there are so few people that still cling to the fact that humanity was conceived to be dignified, to be enlightened, to be free. And most people are unwilling to show any backbone. That's we have been indoctrinated in school to be politically correct, to go along with the flow, to accept the indoctrination. And so the vast preponderance of people simply go along. That was why that program that I spoke of yesterday called Newton that you and I talked about is so debilitating. They're trying to identify those people who are willing to put their heads above the crowd. Those who seek dignity for individuals, those who believe in personal freedoms,
that was what I was thinking of in the first place. Do you remember the man was a Marine officer, and he included Marines. What was done? He included Marines, like it doesn't matter if they're religious or political or Marines, like anyone who comes to believe in a sense of personal individual dignity.
Right. Yeah, a sense of purpose that differs from the overall purpose of the government. And the purpose of the government is to control, to manipulate, to fleece. And so if your sense of purpose is different than that. And, of course, what's really interesting here is that and it is true that the U.S. government is active in its places like West Point and the Naval Academy on teaching its future military leaders to view Americans as the potential enemy and to view certain aspects of America as the enemy. And they're enemies for different reasons. There's enemies of a physical threat, which would be what they consider to be the right-wing Christians who are gun advocates. They consider them to potentially be violent threats. And then there's those who wield words. And they are considered to be even a greater threat.
Back in the 80s, the movies, you'd see them make fun of Soviets for referring to dissidents as enemies. He's an enemy of the people.
Yeah, enemy. That's right, enemy of the people. Right. Yeah, it's an enemy of the people is anyone who would dare speak against the agenda of the state is an enemy of the people. And if you look at some of there've been a number of people who have disclosed the documents that are being used by those trying to influence military leaders and those influencing government leaders in this regard and police, the like, that Yahweh's name often appears on the list of those to be really careful about, that those who have a strong sense about and associate with the name Yahweh are those who are especially to be feared.
Hey, I'll sign up. Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, if I'm going to go down, and I realize my personality is not going to mesh well with theirs. You know, somebody's going to tell me with a bunch of guns to lay down on the ground and go spread eagle, and I'm going to say, right. I'm not likely to survive this. You get into the situation of saying, all right, so I get a quick exit to eternity. That ain't so bad.
Yeah, you're talking to my 85-year-old dad about, he'll talk about, like, my circumstances, what I'm doing or what I'm doing. I'm like, man, I don't have to worry about that. I'm not going to be here when I'm 85. I'm not going to be here when I'm 70. You know.
Yeah. And I look at it as, we have so little time, and this is really the calm before the storm. As bad as it is around the world, and we're seeing witnesses of things that are going to happen. We're seeing the overtures like the money grab in Cyprus, where everyone that had more than $100,000 had their wealth stolen in Cyprus. That was the test balloon to see could they do it in a larger country. And there's just a matter of time, and it will be done in the United States. It will be done in European countries.
Put pen to paper on that a couple months ago, didn't they? That they haven't implemented anything? Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And matter of fact, there was correspondence between the United States and the EU on that plan, that it's rather than have the currency collapse, and the currency of European nations and the United States are on the verge of collapse, because that's why, you know, the United States is using the smoke and mirrors of quantitative easing to create the illusion of treasury funding. But that will collapse, and when it's on the verge of collapse, they're going to confiscate the savings of those with more than $100,000 in savings, and they're going to use it to keep their currency propped up so they can create the illusion of an economy.
I see no correlation at this point, and especially in the past few weeks. You watch, like yesterday, in the night shift, watching all the markets around the world being in the red and the momentum. And the power of the plunge protection team or the people at the top with keyboards must just be amazing in terms of juggling the numbers, because I see no correlation now between actual physical world business events and what the markets or indices are doing. There's just no correlation anymore.
Correct. It's what's interesting, of course, when you listen to the pundits speak about market movements, they will all give a reason for it after the fact, and the reason is almost wholly irrelevant from the
weather,
the actual For example, right now the American economy is tanking again, and the excuse is, well, we had a really cold winter. But how can we have a really cold winter? Because we're experiencing global warming. But nonetheless, they're blaming it all on the weather.
The CNBC talking heads were openly speculating that they couldn't correlate what was going on in the markets with all the stories they had to put out.
It's hugely manipulated. The thing that really troubles me about the manipulation too is they're actually manipulating currencies against one another to create the impression of value, and they're manipulating the price of gold also to create the illusion of value. And, you know, you will read that, you know, inflation in the United States is under 1 or 2%. And then you look at a 10-year synopsis of the prices of most things that are important to people. Oh, and they're 20%, 25, 30% different than what they were. And so you're saying, yeah, right. Yeah, no, it's all now misinformation. Smoke and mirrors, misinformation.
Plus, just yesterday, we've had Russia and China cut a 30-year oil and gas deal, and I'm pretty sure they didn't use U.S. dollars to do it. So that's going to have some far-reaching implications.
No, they, in fact, the majority of oil deals now are done outside the U.S. reserve currency. They are being done in either euros, they're being done in the International Monetary Fund's Bancor notes, or they're being done directly in other currencies. We've lost the credibility to be the world's reserve currency.
Oh, yeah, and that just cuts the flow of liquidity phenomenally. That's an unfair advantage we've had since the end of World War II.
Right. It's the only reason we've been able to deficit spend and create a deficit that's over 100% of our gross domestic product is because we are the reserve currency, which gives us the ability to borrow money, because the only way that other countries can do business in dollars is for them to have an investment of dollars, and they typically do so through T-bills. So it was the mechanism that allowed the U.S. to run on debt for so many years. But that mechanism is no longer functioning. That's why we went into quantitative easing. But quantitative easing is nothing but an illusion. And somewhere along the line, people are going to realize that, and it's going to collapse. Dateline, Tripoli, Libya. Yes, the United States. We did such good work in Libya. We should be so proud of ourselves for bombing Muammar Gaddafi and deposing the secular government of Muammar Gaddafi. Yes, we accomplished such a wonderful thing there in Libya. U.S. Military has doubled the number of aircraft standing by in Italy, if needed, to evacuate Americans from the U.S. Embassy in Tripoli, CNN has learned. A decision to evacuate as violence in the Libyan capital grows is minute by minute, hour by hour, a defense official told CNN. Fierce fighting swept across the city Sunday after armed men stormed the country's interim parliament. Sporadic bursts of gunfire and blasts could still be heard on the outskirts of the capital and in the parliament building. Yes, nothing says democracy better than the rat-a-tat-tat of an AK-47. But by the way, they're just not using AK-47. It was when the United States, John McClown and Barack Hussein Obama partnered together to go and bomb Libya. There were scenes from Libya that I shared on this program that I said, wait a minute. I know that Muammar Gaddafi is a reclusive syphilitic, and that he's probably not the most stable coin in the drawer. But I'm looking at the rebels who are trying to oppose him. And they're not carrying Molotov cocktails. They're not carrying AK-47s. Well, there's a few of them that are. They're rolling around in pickup trucks with with 50 caliber machine guns. They've got anti-aircraft guns in the backs of their pickup trucks. They've got surface-to-air missiles. They've got anti-tank missiles. These guys are armed to the hilt. And I said, no, 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 no. There's something going on here. And come to find out, it was the United States and the CIA working together with Qatar to supply the Islamic fundamentalists, the Mujahideen, the jihadists. By the way, in most cases, the same jihadists that we were fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq, the highest percentage per capita of foreign jihadists in both Iraq and Afghanistan came from Libya. So the very same jihadists we were calling terrorists and fighting there, we were now supplying very sophisticated weapons, anti-aircraft weapons, surface-to-air missiles, anti-tank rounds, rocket-propelled grenades, 50-caliber machine guns. And we were providing them by the thousands. And so every scene that you saw filmed in Libya, that's what was being deployed against Muammar Gaddafi. And he said, oh, wow, there's something really, really troubling about this. This is not going to turn out well. And sure enough, it turned out exactly as I predicted it would. And now they're rolling around with those same kind of weaponry and having riots in Tripoli. Yeah, I wonder if maybe it was a second airing or maybe another clip from the Christian film. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, I don't think so. There's some interesting stuff coming out about that Christian film story being a ruse and a pretty weak one recently. I mean, it's pretty much indefensible at this point. But
completely indefensible.
Absolutely. It's transparent. The tripod-mounted 50 cal is not an option available on Toyota pickup trucks here in the United States.
Because the United States, we have the U.S. Constitution says there shall be no limitation to the right to keep and to bear arms. And in the United States Constitution actually speaks of the weapons being of the caliber that would be used for a militia, recognizing that a militia was absolutely essential to a free society. A militia is not the military, folks. It is civilians with arms. That the civilians with arms was absolutely essential to the freedom of a country. So our Constitution grants us the right to buy the Toyota with that option. That did not exist in Libya. And so our government precludes the Constitution and therefore our rights to buy the Toyota with that option. But, of course, the Qatari government via the USCIA makes it the most popular model in Libya.
I know. But here in the U.S., your wife can get a pink 380. So.
That's true. Now, what is also troubling about this is that Boko Haram was nothing prior to the supply of weapons to the fundamentalist Mujahideen in Libya. The Central African Republic was peaceful. Chad was peaceful. Mali was peaceful. We can attribute the kidnap of those 300 little girls in Africa to Nigeria to exactly what happened when we supplied the Mujahideen with weapons. In a move that could further inflame an already tense situation, says CNN, the Speaker of the Interim Parliament, Nuri Abu Shamain, who is backed by Islamic forces, ordered troops known as the Central Libya Shield Forces to deploy to the capital on Monday. The Libyan state news agency reported. Yes, there's nothing that says peace more than having two overly weaponized Islamic militant organizations firing at one another. And, of course, who gave them their toys? The United States deploying the Qatari gun-running regime. The forces, mostly from the city of Misrata, east of Tripoli, are considered to be among the most powerful Islamist-affiliated militias. Okay, they're Muslims being Muslims. They've had long-running rivalries with heavily armed Zintan militias, which are also fundamentalist Islamists, in the capital. Yes, nothing brings peace to a country than having that country fall into the hands of Islamic jihadists. Just think about how peaceful Syria is going to be when the weapons that America has been providing through Qatar to the Syrian Mujahideen prove effective and they topple the Assad government. Just how peaceful that place is going to be. We've given them even more sophisticated weapons and vastly more of them than we have to the Libyans. Boy, don't we make a mess of things.
Oh, absolutely. Growing up as a kid, I always thought that, you know, that the line, the shores of Tripoli, was a historical reference, not something that was going to be future-oriented in my life, during my lifetime.
You know, it's interesting about that, is that the story emanates from the fact, you know, President Obama says, you know, America's never been at war with Islam and will never be at war with Islam. America's first war as a new nation was fought against Islam. And that's where from the shores of Tripoli comes from. Jefferson was trying to deal with the fact that the Barbary Coast Muslim pirates were raiding and capturing American ships and then capturing and kidnapping the crews and ransoming them back off after they'd stolen what was aboard those merchant ships. And so Jefferson met with an ambassador of the Ottoman Empire to find out who controlled them, to say, you know, why are you doing this to us? We're not at war with you. Why are you kidnapping our people and robbing our ships as pirates? And, of course, he gave him a copy of the Quran and says, here, right here in the Quran and with our hadith from our prophet, it tells us, and there's specific hadith that Muhammad uttered that tell Muslims to take to ships and to be pirates. And he quoted, he says, you know, we're going to continue to do this forever. Just get used to it. And so when it got really bad, Jefferson had to dispatch the fledgling American Navy to free the hostages being held in northern Africa, and that's where the lyrics of the song came from.
Okay.
And it's the reason why, by the way, you know, you've probably heard that Ellis, the congressman from Minnesota who's a Muslim, wanted to be sworn in on the Quran, got his way because he used the Quran that Jefferson had. And so it was Jefferson's Quran. Well, the reason Jefferson had the Quran was because he was trying to say, he says, is it really possible that a religion could endorse piracy? And of course, he found out, yes. The religion does endorse piracy.
He had the Quran because he was following Sun Tzu's advice to know your enemy.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's amazing what you learn when you do a little digging in terms of the closets of our history. But, you know, here, the point that I really wanted to make at the end of the last segment is that the hell that has been unleashed under the auspices of the Islamic Spring, that was the catalyst for that was Barack Hussein Obama's speech in Cairo telling Muslims that this was their time and that their religion and their cause was great and that this was their time to rise up. And they did. And that the United States started arming them, started providing billions of dollars worth of weapons to them. In Libya, the direct consequence in Libya is not just the riots that are and the war between the various jihadists that we armed in Libya. It is that they exported their weapons throughout North and Central Africa. Boko Haram emerged as a direct result of this. Boko Haram went from just being loudmouthed and irritating to burning whole villages down and having the equipment to go in and kidnap hundreds of little girls as a direct result of us weaponizing the conflict in Libya. We're to blame once again.
Wow. Amazing. This is, you know, and it's funny, as you're speaking, I'm thinking, this is one of the reasons I'm not terribly receptive to the people who harangue on constantly about All of the America's institutions, its media and stuff, being controlled by a Jewish conspiracy, because I'm thinking, how is it possibly in the interest of the Jews to do all this stuff that's facilitating all this violent, you know,
Correct.
Proliferation?
Yeah. Correct. Yeah, it's
or
just
it's Sterling, who's a Jew, yeah, being sold down the river to the Vietnamese. It's like,
right,
what's going on? You know?
Where, yeah, no, the in conspiracy theory, Jews are the of the source of all evil, and it really goes back to their animosity towards Adam Weishaupt, who was Jewish, and to the Rothschilds. And I'm not going to make any excuses for the Rothschilds. They are international bankers, and as such, international bankers finance both sides in wars because wars create deficits. This is why Jefferson was so opposed to a standing military. The Rothschilds, as international bankers, should be slathered with the same brush that we slather all international bankers. But it has nothing to do with them being Jewish. You know, it's, you know, the conspiracy theorists will buy into the protocols of the Elders of Zion, which is a complete and utter fraud. You know, there is not a Jewish conspiracy to take over the world. Jews are not influencing America through the media or through banking or through any other mechanism. They're an irrelevant percentage of the population. It's
or even if significantly influential. Or disproportionately so, or whatever. It's one, you know, even if you were, you know, trying to manipulate, it's one thing to pit dingling European princes and countries against one another, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know that the bloodletting is going to have an end and that things are going to settle. But with a worldwide Islamic, you know, movement to control the world, why would you want to facilitate that? It's like saying, I'm here. It's like deliberately releasing the plague in your own town and hoping you don't get it.
Oh, of course. Yes, America is supplying 25 times more advanced weaponry to the Islamic nations surrounding Israel than we do to Israel, making inevitable the surrender of the West Bank because Israel will not be able to defend itself. Is what is transpiring now. And so if there was a great Jewish conspiracy to orchestrate the affairs of government, that's the last thing they would do.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
I mean, the last thing they would do is have a president go to Cairo and speak of this being the time of Islam and to inspire Islamic reformation and then to provide the weapons that those Muslims are wielding. And it's,
right.
And all you have to do is just open your eyes and realize what is being done to see that the conspiracy theorists are doing the same thing that has been done for well over 2,000 years, which is to scapegoat a group of people. It's what Hitler did. He scapegoated a group of people. The Jews had absolutely nothing to do with the situation that existed in Germany in the 1920s, nothing. It wasn't their fault. But Hitler found a way to scapegoat at people that, because of the popularity of the religion of Christianity, are despised, that created an artificial enemy for them to rail against. It's the same thing in conspiracy theory. It's an artificial enemy that is positioned as the manipulative foe, and it's just not true. It wasn't true in Nazi Germany. It isn't true today.
Yeah, I'm sure that, like, all the Jewish people I know who attend local synagogues and work jobs and live busy family lives and are terribly anxious to have our economy crash and martial law and, you know, or, and an EMP attack. You know, it's just, yeah, they want to have their lives disrupted, I'm sure.
It is absurd. I'm not Jewish. I am a Zionist, but I'm not Jewish. I'm a Zionist by the official designation. Yahweh is a Zionist. Yahweh named the Mount, you know, one of the three prominent mountains surrounding Jerusalem. One is Moriah, which means to revere Yah. The other is the Mount of Olives, because olives are the symbol of light and of Yahweh's spirit, which is light. And the third is Mount Zion. Mount Zion in Hebrew, it's not with a Z, it's with a T-S, by the way. But T-S-Y, O-W, the W is the vowel, N, that Mount Zion means the signpost that has been established along the way. It's that Jerusalem and what is in Jerusalem serves as the signpost along the way from our polluted world to Yahweh. Right. So since I'm really fond of Yahweh's signpost and his testimony, I would consider myself a Zionist, even though I'm Sioux Indian by race.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, so you're not, but you're not a Talmudic Labor Party.
No, I'm not into the Talmud. I'm not a supporter of Judaism. In fact, I'm opposed to the religion of Judaism. I'm opposed to rabbinic philosophy, and I'm not. You know, I've spent a fair amount of time in the Israeli Knesset, and I know senior Israeli officials. I am not a fan of the Israeli government. I would say that in terms of heads of state, Benjamin Netanyahu would be in the top half a dozen, but there are a lot of things that he does that, you know, I don't agree with. So I'm not aligned with the Israeli government, but I am aligned with Yahweh's chosen people, not because their behavior warrants it, but because so many people are opposed to them for no other reason than anti-Semitism. And I know what Yahweh's view is towards anti-Semitism. We have indeed made a mess in the world, and Libya is one of those. That was the consequence of us bombing the secular government into oblivion. The same thing, by the way, exists in Iraq today. We arranged to have Saddam Hussein, who was a secular dictator, killed so that a Shiite government managed out of Tehran could take control, and the result is that there's more terrorist killings in Iraq than any other place on earth. One last story here in the news. This begins, and it was from the BBC. The fiery British cleric. Fiery British cleric. He's just a fundamentalist Muslim, who prosecutors said had devoted his life to violent jihad, which every Islamic cleric devotes their life to Islamic jihad. They have to, otherwise they can't be an Islamic cleric. Had dispatched young men around the world to train and fight, was convicted of 11 terrorism-related charges on Monday in Manhattan. Prosecutors had charged the cleric, Mustafa Kemal Mustafa. I always like it when you've got a couple of Mustafas in your name. The former imam at the Finsbury Park Mosque in North London. The Finsbury Park Mosque in North London. So he was the senior imam in a North London mosque. That he helped orchestrate the violent 1998 kidnappings of 16 American, British, and Australian tourists in Yemen, and that he had tried to create a terrorist training camp in Bligh, Oregon. That he supported terrorism by sending one of his followers to train with Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. In the tourist abductions, four hostages were killed, and their captors, a militant group allied with Mr. Mustafa, that would make them Muslims, used them as shields during a Yemeni rescue operation. He jumped at the opportunities across the globe to support his violent jihad, the prosecutor said. He doesn't have a jihad. Allah has a jihad. He is Allah's jihadist. Prosecutors had introduced statements by Mr. Mustafa in which he spoke approvingly of the 2000 bombing of the American destroyer Cole in Yemen, that he called Osama bin Laden a hero and said everyone was happy when the planes hit the World Trade Center. And Muslims around the world celebrated. It is absolutely true. Now, what is stunningly stupid is to say that the Mossad was involved in it, and the Mossad orchestrated the bombings of the World Trade Center as if Jews were Muslims. It brings us right back to the same stupidity. But in this trial, the cleric who defended himself said that what he was doing was he was doing in the name of Islam, and that his religion sanctioned what he was doing, and he told the truth. It does. It is a shame that we are incapable of associating Islam with the terror that it inspires, even recognizing that Islam is responsible for 99.9% of the terrorist acts in the world today, that Islam was solely responsible for what happened on 9/11 in New York with the loss of 3,000 innocent lives. And we continue to exonerate the religion by pretending that we're engaged in a war on terrorism when terrorism is nothing but a tactic. It is one of the great acts of misinformation that has ever been perpetrated on the world. And the consequence of that misinformation is going to claim millions, if not billions, of lives. There is always a consequence to lying. And when the lies are at the world and government level, the consequence of lies always claims millions, if not billions, of lives. And it's precisely what's going to happen here. Incidentally, one of the reasons that Christians tend to ascribe to anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, and not all conspiracy buffs are anti-Semitic, but the reason that so many are is that if you go back all the way into Rome, Hadrian, for example, Hadrian outlawed the Torah, called it illegal. He outlawed Hebrew. He outlawed circumcision, which is the sign of the covenant. Without circumcision for a man, there can be no relationship with God and no salvation. Rome, which became the Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox Church, which became Christianity, is overtly opposed to Yahweh and his testimony.